The reading I had this morning that serves as text for my sermon comes from, it is called Gene Roddenberry, from the March-April 1991 edition of The Humanist, written and interviewed by David Alexander. One of the questions Alexander asked Roddenberry in this interview was, and these are his words, "Was there some pressure on you from the network to make Star Trek white people in space?" Roddenberry's answer was, "About Star Trek, there were comments like, 'Come on, you're certainly not going to have blacks and whites working together,' that sort of thing. I said that if we don't have blacks and whites working together by the time our civilization catches up to the time frame of the series set in, there won't be any people. I guess my argument was so sensible it stopped even the zealots." Now, before I dive in deep with my sermon this morning, I want to point out this stole, and I'll step out so you can all see it. And the cool thing is it's even double-sided. Oh, thank you. Well, Amy helped me pick it out.
So
where was that stolen? I became a known trickie at my internship church in Evanston, Illinois, and this was one of my going-away presents. There was a lady who was a seamstress, and she made me two stoles. She made me this one, and she made me a Dr. Seuss stole, because I was in charge of reading the story there as well, and Seuss is kind of my go-to when I can't think of anything else. But anyway, so this is from Evanston, Illinois, and it's one of the things I treasure that they gave me. Now, one of the questions that I asked of seminary students is, as should be asked by anyone considering the ministry, is, "What is your personal theology?" This is a question I have spent much of my time pondering while at seminary and after, because most of my time there, I didn't really have a good explanation for how I really felt. Over the course of my ponderings, I was thinking about where it started for me. For me, it started in the Catholic Church. On my father's side, I am the descendant of French Catholics, my great-grandmother's family who emigrated from Quebec. I thought about what my theology as a child had been, and it was pretty basic. If you behave yourself and you're a good person, you get to go to heaven after you die. Much of my Sunday school lessons reflected these ideas, so for much of my childhood, that was as far as my thinking went. In reflecting on this, my middle-aged self thinks of this type of theology as like a parent telling a child that if they behave themselves in the store, they'll get a treat afterwards. Clearly, my thinking and feelings have changed much since then. Theology evolves, it would seem. This is why we call it a spiritual journey, because we change the way we see the divine as our own experiences change us. For example, one of my favorite musicians, Peter Mayer, wrote a song called "Holy Now." Have you all heard it? Some of you have. It's very good. That speaks from his own experience. When he was young, he also grew up Catholic and believed that miracles were rare, but since becoming a UU in his adult life, he sees miracles everywhere. In thinking of matters of personal theology, there are times in life we often turn to art for processing our big emotions. In using art, this can be a way of expressing our personal theology, similar to what Peter Mayer has done. Now, can you think of a film, a play, a TV show which chronicles the evolution of a character's or creator's personal theology? I'm guessing you all have seen something like this. As stated moments ago, I am a big Star Trek fan. I would like to say that I put the T in Trekkie. I've been watching Star Trek ever since I was about 6 or 7 years old, and maybe even it was even before that. I just had this memory of always knowing what it was. Getting interested in Star Trek meant also learning about its creator, Gene Roddenberry. In September of this year, in fact, it'll be on September 6th, Star Trek will celebrate its 60th anniversary of its debut on NBC, which is pretty remarkable considering we are still talking about a show that never rose above 51st in the ratings. Now, I won't give you a whole biography of Gene Roddenberry's life, but here are some of the basic facts about him. First, he was born in Texas in 1921 and moved to Los Angeles when he was still a child. As an adult, he became a pilot and flew B-17s in the Pacific during World War II. After the war, he became a commercial pilot with Pan Am, and after surviving not one, not two, but three plane crashes during the war and after, he decided he had enough, got out of the pilot seat, and became a police officer in Los Angeles, like his father had been. I guess being a cop was less dangerous than being a pilot. He started working with Los Angeles Police Chief William Parker, who the original Los Angeles Police Department building was later named after. He worked with him. He first started out as a speechwriter for William Parker. He then started writing freelance scripts for television shows, and by the late 1950s, decided he liked writing better than being a cop. And one of the shows he wrote a lot of scripts for was the show Have Gun, Will Travel. Do you all remember that one? Yes. In fact, there's an episode, I knew it was him before I saw his name on the credits, because one of the characters' name was Robert Wesley, which was kind of a pen name for Roddenberry. It was in 1965 he created, and with the help of his producers, sold Star Trek to NBC. Over the course of the last 30 years of his life, and with the various expressions of Star Trek that he was involved with, one can see how his theology changed over time. So I'm going to start with the original series. It ran from 1966 to 1969, and over that time frame, whenever the Enterprise crew landed on a planet that was seemingly run by some kind of supreme being, it usually turned into something less than supreme. On two occasions, God turned out to be massive computers. In the case of the Enterprise encountering the ancient Greek god Apollo, where they run into an actual god, it turns out he wasn't really divine either. He had an extra organ in his body to channel energy, and he used that to manipulate the atmosphere and do all the stuff that he did. In only one episode, and in only the last 5 minutes of that episode, was the term Son of God used at all. In fact, it was an episode that pondered what would have happened if the Roman Empire had lasted into the 20th century. So what we see in these original 79 episodes is the idea that if a population worships a higher being, it will not only be some kind of false god, but one that will turn society into mindless automatons, or worse yet, stifle human progress to the point of going backwards. The Roddenberry that we see in these episodes is one that is clearly skeptical of organized religion and of gods in general. And I can't help but wonder what he would think of all the statistics that say there's a growing number of people who consider themselves spiritual but not religious in the 21st century. But in each of these episodes, during the course of the original series, it was Kirk and company that outthought the godlike machines and the people, which played very much into Roddenberry's ideals of humanity pulling itself out of the messes that we have created for ourselves. A question that was asked of Roddenberry in that 1991 interview was, "Are you truly optimistic about human beings?" His response was, "Oh yes, we are a young species. I think if we allow ourselves a little development, understanding what we've done already, we'll be surprised what a terrible, lovely group that humans can evolve into." I wonder if he'd still say that if he were living now. Now, by 1979, between the loyalty of the expanded Star Trek fan base and the success of Star Wars, the first Star Trek movie was released titled The Motion Picture. And this was the first time a television show had sort of leveled up to the level of a motion picture, of a feature film. Now, the reason I mentioned this particular movie out of the six movies that had the original cast, this was the one movie that Roddenberry had the most influence over. After the motion picture, he was given the title Creative Consultant and was then essentially pushed out of the way. I've been re-watching this movie for much of my life, and as an adult, the part that I find compelling among the endless special effects scenes, which are quite beautiful, is the fact that the main antagonist, an entity that calls itself V'ger, is looking to touch the hand of its creator, which in essence is looking to touch the hand of the god of its understanding. And also from the motion picture, the other character I wish to talk about is Spock. Spock is half human, half alien, or Vulcan, if you know, and his alien half operates on pure logic. The journey of Spock in this movie is similar. When the movie begins, he is taking part of a ceremony to shed all vestiges of human emotion. V'ger, which also operates on pure logic, calls to Spock across the vastness of space to where Spock is compelled to rejoin the Enterprise crew in an effort to contact V'ger. At one point, Spock turns to Kirk and states that V'ger is a child and is looking for guidance. And Spock states that, at some point in a person's life, that person will turn to a god, a parent, or an older brother and say, "Is this all that I am? Is there nothing more?" Who among us haven't asked ourselves that question at some point in our lives? This question is what helped bring me to Unitarian Universalism almost 30 years ago. Now, Spock eventually finds his answer by being in community with his shipmates. V'ger eventually finds its answer by physically joining with another human being, giving it the human ability to think beyond logic, which it knew it was missing. Perhaps Kirk and crew gave birth to a new life form. And what all this demonstrates to me is that Roddenberry, while still very humanist in how his character solved the problem of V'ger, has changed his ideas a little bit on how to connect with the mystery of life. Instead of finding the so-called man behind the curtain and finding that there's a false god waiting for you or some kind of megalomaniacal computer, what seemed to matter more to him was the journey in finding one's own path to the holy. Now, I'm betting that's what brought most of you to this church. Unitarian Universalism has no creed, and there's no one to tell you here what the right path is. But here, and what Spock found out in the Enterprise, is that if one is in the community, we can all go on this journey together. I find the end of the motion picture to be very existentialist in nature, as Spock is becoming truer to his own nature, and therefore is more comfortable in his own skin. And V'ger literally evolves from our plane of existence to another. When I was younger, I didn't rewatch this movie as much because of its slow pace. In fact, there are some that derisively call it the motionless picture or the motion sickness picture. But as I get older, the idea that V'ger calls the Spock over the vast distance of space, and in the end they help each other to evolve into something bigger than themselves, it appeals to me. And so we'll flash forward a few years later. The final evolution of Roddenberry came with his final creation, which was Star Trek The Next Generation. This show debuted in 1987 and lasted for 7 seasons. The character that I wish to mention is the character of Q, played by John DeLancey. Q is of a race that can manipulate time and space and is self-described as omnipotent. Over the course of the 7-year run of the show, Q only appears 8 times out of 176 episodes. His presence feels a lot bigger, though. And each time he shows up, he puts the Enterprise crew to the test, much to the chagrin of Captain Picard. In fact, in one episode, Picard seemingly dies, and who does he meet in a brightly lit afterlife? He meets Q. In an interview done by William Shatner in the documentary Chaos on the Bridge, writer Brandon Braga states that, with his conception of the future and the human beings in the future, and Q is God. Just look at the character. Look at everything about that character. William Shatner, who was doing the interview, misidentified Roddenberry as an atheist, which I think can be a common misconception. One can be a humanist and not be an atheist. They are not mutually exclusive. This idea was confirmed by Roddenberry himself in a book written by Yvonne Fearn called Gene Roddenberry, The Last Conversation, where he explained his views on God, and these were his words. "It's not true that I don't believe in God. I believe in a kind of God. It's just not other people's God. I reject religion. I accept the notion of God." But what led Roddenberry to include a character that many would see as the embodiment of a Christian God? Going back to the interview from the humanist, David Alexander asked Roddenberry, "How is the Gene Roddenberry today different compared to the Gene Roddenberry of 20 to 25 years ago? Roddenberry's answer was, "He's a more educated man. There is a great deal of an education in what I do. There are magazines and books that I read regularly. and a process of education that I dearly hope will continue. I like me now, which is a change. Which is a change from my mid-30s and 40s. Roddenberry later stated that he attributed his changes by, and again, these are his words, ridding my mind of a lot of foolish passions, accepting myself as I am. I find that I am growing and hope I will continue in this process. Not being so sure of everything and having an open curiosity is also important. I guess in my majority years, somewhere along the line, I must have said to myself, hey, you're not a bad person. Yes, you make mistakes, but you constantly strive to overcome that and to repair them. I've noticed, Gene, that as the years go by, you've changed your points of view on things, which I like to see in a human and in a humanist. I try to continuously perfect myself without any hope of achieving ultimate perfection. It is a marvelous journey. Over the course of his journey, he went from seeing God as something that was found to be false, once one arrived somewhere, to appreciating the search for the holy, to finally including the embodiment of God in his utopian future. And that version of God, while not helping the humans he was messing with, tried to teach them a lesson so that they, the humans, could live up to their ideals they set for themselves as they travel across the galaxy. In each case, the respective crews still adhere to humanist principles in how they deal with the problems they face. But it seems that as Roddenberry got older, he found room in his life to be less certain of his own ideas and more inclusive of ideas that he might have dismissed earlier in his life. I can't help but wonder how much more he would have changed had he lived longer. He died about 6 months after he conducted that interview in October of 1991, in fact. When he died, that was the shows of Next Gen that was showing were the two-parter that had Leonard Nimoy in them, so I thought that was kind of a sad irony. As for my own journey, my own theology has evolved over time. As I went through seminary and through COVID, my theology would be best described as a religious humanist. While that might seem a contradiction in terms, what that means to me is that if we have the brains, we humans have the brains to create these problems we find ourselves in, then we also have the brains to solve them. No one is coming to save us. No one is coming down from on high to give us the keys to immediate and ultimate understanding, not even the Vulcans. This goes for any issue that lies before us. Pick anything: race and class issues, climate change, or fighting fascism. We know what we need to do. Well, most of us know what we need to do. We are the bringers of our own salvation, if we have the courage to manifest that vision. I don't believe in a God that sits on high and passes judgment on humanity. I don't know if there's an afterlife, so it's best that I spend my time making the world a better place while I can. The religious part of the religious humanism, for me, means that there are some things in the universe that we mere mortals can't possibly wrap our heads around. There's a certain mystery to life, certain aspects of existence that we'll never quite understand. Some might call that magic. I call it religious. In honor of the legacy of Gene Roddenberry and of the 60th anniversary of Star Trek, I leave you with these thoughts today. Theology, the final frontier. These are the voyages of all humanity, our ongoing mission to discover strange new ideas and new philosophies, for all of us to boldly go together and individually where we haven't gone before.